Hello and welcome to the Recovering from Religion podcast. Our mission here is to offer hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. What follows is the audio from selected videos posted on Recovering from Religion's YouTube channel. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. So without further ado, allow me to introduce you to our guest, Samantha McGuire. She has a varied background in counseling, education, event planning, and volunteer management. She's a national field director who works with local grassroots activists, volunteers, and affiliates to engage them on emerging local civil rights issues, advocate for state-level legislation, and build thriving communities. Sam, welcome and thank you so much for coming and joining us today.
Hey, I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, you and I have known each other for quite a while because I was a associate state director, assistant state director, or something for the state of Missouri for a while, and you and I have been able to interact and been following your lead while I was doing that. It was a lot of fun. But we're here to talk about the American Atheist today, right?
Indeed, we are. We're gonna talk about the organization and give you kind of a broad overview of what we're up to over at American Atheists, in case you aren't familiar. And then hopefully we're going to tie what we're doing into what you all are doing and talk about where there's some intersection and overlap with our missions and our goals. So seems like it'll be a good time. I'm going to see if I can get my screen to share. It's always a test, right?
Yep.
It worked during the thing. Now it doesn't work at all. There it goes.
Yay. It looks perfect.
Wonderful. Okay, so American Atheists. We've been around since 1963. We're founded by Madeline Murray O'Hare. She was known as the most hated woman in America at the time. And American Atheists has been fighting to protect absolute separation of religion and government for almost, it's over 50 years now, almost 60 years. We're coming up on our anniversary. So for a brief little bit of history, the organization was started after she filed a lawsuit in 1959. Her son had been forced to pray in school, and she didn't like that as a devout atheist. And she filed a lawsuit against the school, and the case was then consolidated with another case that was going on the same topic. And in 1963, the Supreme Court found that you couldn't have prayer in schools. And so right after that, the Society for Separationists, I had to look down at my notes because I always forget the name of it, was founded, and that was the precursor for American Atheists.
So now, just to be clear, Sam, prayer in schools is not necessarily illegal. It's just, here in the U.S., it just can't be initiated by the staff, teachers, or principal.
Absolutely. Okay. You are more than welcome to pray. Students are more than welcome to pray on their own time and at their own direction and of their own volition. You can't have teacher-led or administrative-led prayer. We can talk later about Project Blitz bills and the amount of bills that are moving through state legislators at this time that try to circumvent this. There was one passed in Florida this year that our state director in Florida, Devin, went and spoke out against quite a bit that was about having a moment of silence at the beginning of the school day. So there's a mandatory moment of silence that the bill sponsors said, oh no, of course we're not trying to tell these kids that they should be praying. And then of course, as soon as it was passed and signed into law, the founder, the person who sponsored the bill was like, yes, it's great. Now the kids will be able to pray in the beginning of the school day. So yeah.
And this would extend to sporting events where coaches might even initiate the prayer. And that's a big no-no
here in the U.S. Absolutely. Prayer, the staff, the teachers, the coaches that are volunteers, none of those folks are supposed to lead prayer. I'm sure you could have Jeff Blackwell, he is our litigation attorney, come on and do an entire separate podcast on all of the legal issues that that we face around the country. Perhaps I should suggest a panel of FFRF lawyers and our attorneys for sure, because it's
that
a lot.
Would be interesting.
Right, yeah, it's really a whole lot. So that was the history of our founding. And we have since then, for the last 50 years, over 50 years, we've had different versions of the American Atheist magazine. The current iteration of American Atheist magazine is a quarterly. And we like to very much, you can see, I know you are probably most of you familiar with the Polk County Atheists group mm-hmm. in Florida. They've been super, super active doing lots of community service through COVID and won all sorts of awards from all of the national organizations. So we like to highlight what our groups are doing, what our state directors are doing, and then talk about our legal cases, other issues that we should be concerned about, terrible legislation, things like that.
Yeah, Sarah and her wife came on and gave an RFRX talk early, like at the beginning of this year. And she's also a support group leader for Polk County.
And they're moving to Colorado. Like
they're,
as we
they're
speak,
on their way. Yep.
Packed up into U-Hauls and living out of cars.
Everyone seems to move from Florida to Colorado.
Hmm. Do you blame them?
Well, if you've ever been to Florida.
We had our state director from Kentucky move to Oregon. I said, Johnny, why did you move to Oregon? He said, why wouldn't I? I was like, that's a valid point. A very good point.
Yeah, some of the stories that Sarah has shared with us about the work that she's done to raise awareness in her local community and with those that make laws has just been so eye-opening, really amazing.
Yeah, yeah. She was our, and we'll talk about it a little bit later, but she was a co-chair of our state advocacy teams that were spinning up in different states. And so we're going to put her to work immediately in Colorado as soon as she lands in a house. So we've got big plans out there. So wonderful. That's the magazine. If you get it, if you are a member and give us, I think it's $35 a year for a membership at American Atheists. And then the magazine is part of that benefit.
Wait, this is a physical magazine that arrives in the mail?
It is. Oh. Comes right in the mail. Yep. Old school. You can also see it online. National convention, speaking of not old school, last year it was online. There's our happy selfies from our digital photo booth from our first online convention that we hope not to do any more online conventions, frankly, or at least not only online conventions. We hold the national convention every year. We move it around the country. We'd like to move to states that have really active groups and sort of highlight the local community there, and then bring in also sort of coalition partners, like we might have Planned Parenthood and we might have other groups like that, voter registration groups, things like that at our convention. I know Eric's been there a couple times. I say it all the time. Our convention is the most fun. We have tons of social events. We have Cards Against Humanity. We have pub quiz night. We have a lot of really great speakers. But really, it's the most fun. Usually in normal times, we have about 750 people at our convention. We don't know what Atlanta next year is going to look like. Frankly, we will be having something in person. We hope to see you all there. We'll be there, but we don't know, will we have half the people? Will we have double the people because they're so bored and they want to come see us? I don't know. So it's an interesting time to plan events.
Do you think it'll be a mixture of online and in person, or just purely in person?
Yeah, so that's the big conversation with staff right now. We do a really great in-person convention, and we did a really great online convention. And we have concerns that if we try to do it hybrid, both things won't be quite as good because we'll be stretched too thin. So we're talking that through right now.
Well, speaking for those on other parts of the world who can't just pop in, we love the idea of the online presence too.
I know. And we've talked about, I mean, we do our online webinar series, and we did our online convention. We've talked about doing like a shorter program online every year so that we have that online component, because we did have a ton of new people who obviously couldn't travel to our in-person conventions. We had, I think it was 1,100 people register for the online event. And half of those people were brand new and had never been to an in-person convention. Wow. So there is definitely benefits there, but it's super hard to plan things. I'm sure you all know, having just done your fall retreat and figuring out how to get around travel restrictions and mass mandates and all of those things. So we'll be having, you know, people will be required to be vaccinated. We're going to make sure that we follow all the protocols, but who knows what April is going to look like. It's a very weird time to be planning things.
And it'll be right during my birthday. So I don't know if I can make it, because my birthday.
I'll make you a cake.
Oh, well then. I think I'll have to just go. Is that Easter weekend? You guys normally do it on Easter weekend? Easter
weekend. Yeah, it's always Easter weekend, except for if there is a solar eclipse. We've done, we did in 2017, right? Mm-hmm. The convention was in South Carolina because there was a solar eclipse and it was in August. So for something like that, we might move it. But other than that, it's always Easter weekend. We spend the whole weekend doing all these fun events. And then Easter Sunday, we have a big service project. We use a company that Foundation Beyond Belief also uses. And we packed, I think it was 50,000 meals last convention because we do have so many great volunteers. Wow. So it is super fun. And we, you know, you get to like ring the bell when you pack the box. It's a lot of fun.
Fantastic.
So back to the legal center. We do, as I mentioned, we file lawsuits, but we're really trying to find, and it's not easy. And again, Jeff can do a whole podcast on this. It's not easy to find cases that we think we can win right now with the courts the way they are, with legislation the way they are. So we're very picky about the cases that we take. So that's a picture of the Mississippi license plate. We just sued the state of Mississippi because there is In God We Trust on the plate. But it's not like other In God We Trust lawsuits. We're not challenging that should be the motto or even that it should be on the plate. What we're challenging is that you have to pay $35 to not get this plate. So it's forced speech by the government. Mm. So we try to very carefully pick which lawsuits, and there's you know, lots of reasons that Jeff and Allison pick the ones that they do. But we won't take everything because we don't want to set bad precedent at this point, right? Some lawsuits we know we're not going to do well on, and then they set bad precedents. So,
you know what it's like to journey out of a once cherished belief. Maybe you were devoutly religious, escaped a cult, or perhaps you simply navigated out of some very difficult days, and now you'd like to help someone else do the same. Recovering from Religion is a wonderful support organization for people who feel confused, troubled, and alone as they come to grips with the possibility that they no longer hold a religious belief, or that they risk losing everything if they're honest with themselves and others about their journeys. These people need our help, and Recovering from Religion needs yours. RFR is seeking volunteers. Perhaps you're formerly religious, or you have a specific skill set like speaking a foreign language. Maybe you're just a good listening ear. The RFR Volunteer Training Program will help you translate those abilities into critical assistance, encouragement, and support for the men, women, and youth who contact RFR every day from all over the world. You can relate. You can understand. And you can make their journeys easier. Join the team at Recovering from Religion and remind someone else that they are not alone and someone is here to help. To find out more, click the volunteer tab at recoveringfromreligion.org.
Right. So, Sam, with the current climate and the current makeup of all of the different legal courts, you're finding that that's actually discouraging, or it's actually a disadvantage with so many of the cases that you can pursue. Do you see that changing anytime soon? Do you think the climate is going to change?
So let me recommend a whole panel of lawyers. the SCOTUS appointments are lifetime appointments, right? So we are stuck with what we have right now. And you know, Trump did a really great job of filling a lot of those empty federal bench seats, and Biden is filling as many as he can as fast as he can. But it's not a great environment for our type of case right now. So we just have to be careful.
Meanwhile, RBG is rolling over in her grave, poor thing.
Right, for sure. So one of the other things that we do is we've moved a lot into state policy work. So state legislations, as I was mentioning, we track a bunch of bills. The deeper red means we're tracking more bills. It does so happen that in Texas and Missouri, they're both bad bills in those states, but that just means that we're tracking many bills in those states right now because the special session in Texas is going on, and there's a lot of things going on in Missouri as well. A lot of the other states are kind of dormant right now as they are not in session. But so this will light up next year. There'll be more and more states that get lit up as we track more and more bills. You can go to our website and go to atheist.org activism state legislation. And I'm sure we'll put all these links in the chat later, but and you can sign up and track bills specifically for your state. So if you're in Colorado, you can look and see what things are in Colorado that we're tracking. We actually just hired a new employee at American Atheist. His name is Brett Parker. He is our state policy manager. And so he actually is spearheading this whole project that we have of putting together state advocacy teams and tracking legislation in different states. Right now we have one in Florida, we have one in Virginia, and we have one in Oklahoma, and we're spinning one up in California, Colorado, and hopefully Missouri and Arizona this year. So wow. He is really busy. He has his hands full.
Sam, how many people are part of the whole institution? How many full-time workers do you have with your team?
How many staff do we have?
Staff,
we have 11.
Wow.
And then
that's a lot of work.
Yeah. And then we usually have about 3 law clerks, and then we have amazing, fantastic, wonderful volunteers like Sarah Ray,
yes.
Devin Graham, used to be Eric Wells, but now he volunteers for you. What can I do? but I mean, as you know, you just have to, if you're a small organization and you have really big fights, you have to rely on folks on the ground to help you out with their time and their talents. And so we are super appreciative of all of our volunteers. Yes, and Brett Parker is a former legislator in Kansas. Indeed, he's a state legislator in Kansas. So he knows what it's like to fight in red states with bad laws.
And this is one of the reasons I didn't necessarily want to leave Missouri, because there was so much work to be done there. But
there's plenty to do in Colorado. Don't worry. Yeah. We'll put you to work there too.
All right. Sounds good.
So one of the other projects that we do that we're quite proud of is the State of the Secular States report. We update it every year and we track a bunch of legislation. I think this year we're tracking 50 different laws. That happens to be California on there because I am talking to people from all across the country. But generally the gist of it is we have a bunch of laws in healthcare we're tracking, obviously education, special privilege for religions. So like vaccine exemptions, things like that. California is a blue state, which means it's good. You can see the little triangles there, the positive laws we're tracking. So laws we would like to see are the blue up-facing triangles, and the down-facing red triangles are the laws that we don't like to see. And if they're filled in, that law exists in that state. If they're empty, it does not. So you can see California has lots of empty red triangles and lots of full blue ones. So they got a rating of good in our eyes. But we do that for all 50 states. It is on our website at states.atheist.org. And you can look up and see what sorts of things we think are issues in your states. And even the good states have issues. For instance, in California, there is still not a ban against child marriage on the books. And so that's one of the things we might be working on in California with our coalition partners, Unchained at Last, who spearheads that. You actually just had a update to your medical aid and dying law that passed last year. So there's lots of things we can do even in the good or purpley states like Colorado and Virginia. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Unchained at Last is a great organization. Frady spoke at our conference in 2018, I think. She was amazing. So with that, that's kind of the sort of main axes of what we're doing at American Atheist outside of what my work is. And I'm going to preface what we've been doing and in my position as National Field Director with a bunch of data. I promise that I love data. So in 2019, we launched the US Circular Survey with a bunch of partner organizations. You might notice that I really like talking about working in coalitions a lot because I feel like we're all better together if we work together. So in the US Secular Survey, we did it from October 15th to November 2nd in 2019. And it was a convenience outreach sample. So we basically asked all of our local partners to just spread it as far and wide as they could and have folks like you all, I hope some of you probably answered it. Our original goal was to get 5,000 to 10,000 respondents, and we were going to be really excited with that amount of data. and we ended up with almost 34,000 in like a week. Wow. We had to shut down amazing. The survey because yeah. we were like, oh no, this is too much, because we had a data company doing all of the number crunching and survey design. And so each respondent cost us like $1, right?
For, are you kidding me? Wow.
I'm not kidding you. So we were like, ooh, quick, we got to shut it down. So we have so much great data. I wish we could get more. We might redo it at some point, but it was really amazing. The other thing that I found really interesting about it, and I'll go through some of the other data, was that I think it was 14,000 of the respondents filled out. There was two questions that were like open form questions. You could just tell us a story about anything you wanted, basically, because there's all stories from all over the place, how you left religion, a bad experience you had, anything at all. And 14,000 people filled out those fields. And that's an incredible response rate for that kind of thing. Most people, when they take a survey, they'll check all the boxes and do the multiple choice, but they'll leave those blank. So mm-hmm. that was really interesting. And we still have all of that data too. So it's pretty incredible.
That's awesome.
That really highlights people want to share their stories. There's a real need there for people to be able to feel heard and validated. And a survey like that is a fantastic opportunity for them to feel important, to feel heard.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's really incredible. And so we've done two reports since then. So the reality check is the main report that talks about all of the data. And again, all of these are available on secularsurvey.org. And we already done two pullout reports with the data, one on youth, and by youth, I mean like 18 to 24 college age type students, because they had different numbers than the general population. And then just earlier this month, we released the Black Non-Religious Americans report. And that also had a bunch of different issues. We just did a webinar. If you go to the website, you can watch the webinar panel on that. Mandisa was on it, Sandria and Debbie Goddard, and then Allison, who presented the data. So really interesting stuff is coming out of this. We have two more reports coming out. One is going to be on three more reports coming out. We have one on women, and then one on LGBTQ folk, and then one on rural atheists. So folks in non-urban areas face different challenges. That's fantastic.
Have you seen, has this data, or have these data been compared at all to what the Pew research has come out? Are you able to compare that?
Yeah, nominally. I mean, it's a little bit different because, again, it's a convenient sample, right? So we sent it out to people that we knew were non-religious. So the numbers are a little different, but we also measured slightly different things than what Pew measures in their report. Okay. So I'm sure that somebody with number crunching skills much better than mine could actually take those numbers and do something. Maybe we'll send them over to Ryan Burge or something like that and have him put together all those graphs that he does, because they're great. but yeah, I mean, we have so much data that we just still haven't been able to go through and crunch the numbers in all the ways that we want to. The data itself is also available for folks to request. So if there's, you know, somebody in your community who's a researcher and wants access to this data to do things, you can request it. So
if you're like a data loving Scrooge McDuck, you can collect this data and just dive through it like Scrooge McDuck dives through all the coins.
Yeah, you can create all of the spreadsheets that you ever wanted to have and fill them all in. It would be pretty cool. So just talking about some of the data that we did find, I'm going to try to describe these graphs and things, because I know we have some hearing, some visually impaired people on here, but basically, it's a map of the United States, and it's talking about how religious is your community. And so we asked folks where you live, are people very religious, somewhat religious, a little bit religious, or not at all religious? And 29.8% said very, 44.1% said somewhat, 21.6% said a little bit, and 4.5% said not at all. And then there's a picture of the United States, and you can see that the shading, the darker the shading, the more religious the state was, or the people preserved it to be, right? Like, we don't have actual data, but they felt like it the was perception. More religious. And you can see Utah is obviously an outstanding in the west there, and Idaho, because there's lots of Mormons there, right? But then the Southeast is very, very darkly shaded. And I think that's what we would expect, right? It's called the Bible Belt for a reason.
There's a couple of surprising states there.
Which ones are surprising to you?
Arizona, interesting, halfway.
So Arizona and Alaska are very interesting. The Pew data also backs this up. There's large indigenous populations there. So they don't rate themselves as feeling as religious. And so mm-hmm. there's a higher population of people who are called nuns, right? And we know that nuns aren't all atheists, agnostics, or humanists. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are folks who have a spiritual belief but don't go to churches. And Arizona and Arkansas and Alaska are very high in those numbers, interestingly. So right. Yeah.
Very interesting.
So another thing that we looked at is stigma by state. So saying how many folks felt stigmatized in the states that they lived in, and you can see, somewhat unsurprisingly, that the map is very, very similar. So people feel stigmatized against in the Southeast and Utah, and not quite so much in California and Washington and New England. So no surprises there, but it's really nice to have actual numbers looking at this, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's just a ton of New England states down at the bottom left corner.
Yeah. Yeah, and what's interesting is I grew up in New England. And
did you?
Yeah, I did. I grew up in New Hampshire, and then I moved to Massachusetts for high school and college. And people also just don't talk about their religion there. It's almost rude to ask somebody what their religious belief is. And so then moving to Southern Maryland, where I am now, I was like, who are these people asking what church I go to? Like, it's none of your business. So it is pretty interesting. So you wouldn't feel stigmatized in those states because no one would ask you, what church do you go to? Right. So they wouldn't even know that you're religious or non-religious. So
I'd have very similar experience moving from California to Missouri. You'd make a new friend, you'd meet a new person, and the first question out of their mouth, or their second question after, hey, what's your name? The second question is like, what church do you go to?
What's your home church?
Yeah.
Right.
What? I don't have a church.
I hear about.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The shrine I have to Buddha in the corner? That's, yeah.
Yeah, right? My incense and whatnot. I don't know.
Yeah.
So no surprises with this data, but again, reassuring to see that what we think is true is true.
And full respect and credit to those that have compiled this data and put it together and made it so easy to understand too.
Yeah. And again, the report is, I mean, these are just my favorite graphs from this report. There are a ton of graphs. So definitely go check it out at secularsurvey.org, and you can look at all of these different things. It's really, really cool. So as you can imagine, family rejection is something that we looked at. Mm. And so 37% of our respondents said that they had family that was somewhat or very unsupportive. And then, as you might imagine, that had significant impact on their depression and also on their educational outcomes. If their family rejected them, they didn't make it as far in school, which also makes sense, right? So the graph here is very unsupportive is 19.5%, somewhat unsupportive is 17.5%. Neither supportive or unsupportive, so that middle ground is 33.6. Somewhat supportive is 10.5, and very supportive is 18.9.
Now, approximately how many questions was on this survey in 2019?
Man, that's a good question. I don't remember. If I had to guess, I took it. If I had to guess, I would say there was probably like 40 questions.
Okay.
Something like that. So psychological impacts, we did a depression scale. So again, it wasn't a full, blown looking at everybody's psychological profile on this thing. It was just a few questions to kind of get quick answers on how they were answering, if they were likely depressed and if they were likely lonely. And we did that to compare that to those numbers of discrimination and stigma that we showed earlier, right? So our analysis showed that 1 in 6, so 17.2 participants were likely depressed. And one quarter, a little over a quarter, reported that they often experience one or more indicators of loneliness or isolation. And as you might assume, all of those things were higher in the states where they were concealing their identity, right? So if they were in a state that was highly stigmatized and they faced discrimination, then they would conceal their identity. And then they would feel more depressed and more lonely. So all of that makes sense logically. But again, it's really nice to have these numbers.
That's a powerful, powerful, a lot of statistics that I'm really glad that you brought that out. The stigmatism and how that affects people's frame of mind, their self-worth. Fantastic graph.
Yeah, so the reason that I asked at the beginning how many folks were involved in national organization might be interesting to pull that up in a minute, but we're going to talk about why is because we found that the protective effect of being involved in organizing secularism, right? So if you belong to a national organization, even if you're just a member and donating to Recovering from Religion or American Atheists, and you're getting our emails and you're knowing that there's a community out there for you, then you're much less likely to be depressed and feel lonely, even if that's like a far away sort of nebulous organizational thing, right? Like not people you're going to go to the pub and drink with. Yeah. And then even more so for local group members. So if you have a group that you are going and meeting with and cleaning roads and having drinks and doing social things with, then that also makes it so there's a very protective thing against the feeling of loneliness and isolation. And again, as an organizer, I've always like known that intuitively, but it's nice to be able to say, look, we have data from these 34,000 people that back up what we thought was true all along. So that's a really good thing.
That's powerful, Sam. And those of us that work with the support groups with Recovering from Religion understand the value of that too. We have people that reach out to us. Their only lifeline is their support group. And that's the only place where they can actually feel like they can be themselves. They might be stuck in a family or a community situation where it is even life-threatening to come out and say that they're having doubts or questions. So to be able to feel part of a community, albeit online or anonymously through support groups or just being a part of a group such as yourself gives them such a feeling of hope.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, and I tell folks all the time, and actually, if we want to pull up those poll results or if you want to just read them off real quick, I'm curious if folks are members of things here.
Yeah, let me share the results here. Question number one, are you a member of a national secular organization? Oh my God, Grizz, perfect timing, buddy. we had 36% say yes, 56% said no, and 8% weren't really sure. And the second question being, are you a member of a local secular community group? 52% said yes, 44% said no, and 4% not sure. So over half of the folks here are a member of their local secular community.
Interesting. And
yeah. And I know that personally, when I deconverted and I was going through my own transition, I super felt really, really alone and in Southwest Missouri, and finding that secular group was so, so important to me. Like I felt so much better after that.
Yeah. And I tell people all the time, because, you know, we have, one of my jobs is to work with all of our community leaders and try to help them build stronger, better groups. But in a lot of times I'll hear community leaders saying, oh, well, you know, our group's just social. We just go out and get drinks. We just have dinner. We just do picnics. And I'm like, you don't understand. That's not a just. For people who need that community, it's very important to them to be able to go and do those social things. So don't feel bad if that's all your group is doing. I mean, obviously right. We would love it if you did other things, if you did community service and advocacy and those things, but it's not just, you are still providing a service to those folks who need that. So
part of the community group that I was involved with, we did a lot of community service too. Mm-hmm. We would pack lunches for school kids at a local food pantry and clean up a highway. There's a big mega church called James River Assembly out there, and they did not sponsor the stretch of highway in front of them. So the local secular community took that stretch of highway and cleaned it up.
Wonderful.
It was a lot of fun. When we just happened to find a good time that worked on Sunday morning for all of us. And that's just kind of when we did the cleanup. It was great.
Yeah, so our local group here that I run is, our highway is on one of the most trafficy intersections going onto the Navy base. And so I have a free billboard in my very conservative, very Republican, very white, very Christian county that I live in. And that we have a billboard says Southern Maryland Area Secular Humanists. And so people will find us through that billboard, you know, because the little highway sign there. And they're like, oh my goodness, it was so good to see that there was other folks here who who feel like me. So yeah, the highway cleanup is great. It's free advertising.
Yeah, exactly. And I found 10 bucks one time.
Oh, we have a bingo card actually.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Yeah, no. We have a bingo card of all the weird things we find, because you find liquor bottles, you find condoms used and unused, you find syringes, you find all sorts of weird things on the side of the road, electronics, phones that people throw out their window. It's amazing. So
the most common thing that we found were cigarette butts. It drove me nuts.
You can't pick all those up either. You just can't. It's so sad, but you can't.
Yeah. So, on a tangent, I had this concept of like an art idea. Like I would spend every night for 30 days or something collecting cigarette butts and then going to like a town square and just pouring them all in the center. Like, this is what I collected in 30 days. Pick up your goddamn butts.
It drives me crazy. And because we are at that like super busy intersection, there's just so many right there because people are parked at the light and they just drop them out. And I'm like, could you just not? But yeah, that's a whole other rant I could go on. So American Atheist Affiliates, these are our affiliates. And you'll see that, again, it mimics that same map again, doesn't it? Where down in the Southeast, where people feel stigmatized and marginalized, there's a lot of active groups that are out there doing good things because they feel like they need to build that community so that they can be around other folks who think like them. It's we have a lot of groups in California, but that's a testament to them organizing themselves, and they do tend to be sort of more social, getting together for fun kind of groups. So discussion groups and things like that. Whereas the ones in the Southeast are really the ones that are doing service projects and getting out in the community and doing invocations and showing up at county commissioners meetings and really are active in their communities.
And when you, when you say affiliates, are these just secular secular community groups?
Yep. So we have about 230 across the country that have chosen to affiliate with American Atheists. And some of the benefits of being affiliates are we'll send you fun swag. Look at all that fun swag. Yeah. We'll send you fun swag for tabling at events. You have access to our speakers, which has become even more so now with things online, right? We'll come and stop into your Zoom and talk to folks. We also, if you're an affiliate, we can give you some other resources like access to our legal staff, access to our legislative staff, access to those folks. And then we also have a bunch of trainings that we give folks to talk about how to build local community. I'm sure you're familiar with the ACES program. So, yeah.
Wonderful. Sam, can I just ask on that previous graph, the coloration, the different colors, what does that denote?
Yeah, good question. So the pink ones are our local partners. And what that basically means is that we had a convention there at one point, as far as I can tell. So they're always a nonprofit that has their own board and their own leadership, and they're involved in many facets of organizing. The blue ones are anywhere from 501c3s that are organized with a board and everything to a meetup or a Facebook group. And so sometimes they exist only online. Sometimes they just get together for drinks. But you know, my goal is to make it so that every single secular group out there is a spot on this map, because often the first word that people Google is atheist. They don't necessarily Google humanist first or secular, right? They're like, I think I'm an atheist. Where do I find them? And so I want to have every single secular group on here so that if you are in Montana, I know it's sad, there's no groups in Montana. If you're in Montana and you're an atheist, you can find a group, right? So that's my personal goal, is to cover this map with flags as much as I can.
Fantastic.
And there's a weird idea out there that's kind of from like 10, 12 years ago, that if you're an American Atheist affiliate, you can't affiliate with AHA, right? Or you, if you're a CFI affiliate, you can't be listed on the AHA map. And that's like, it's a very old school kind of train of thought before the groups really started working together much more than they do now. So
that's wonderful.
We're working on it.
You know, I'm looking at this obviously with an Australian perspective as well, and we're individually affiliated with quite a few of the groups in Australia, Sydney Atheists and other groups like that, and the humanist organisations. Do you work in with some international groups like that as well? And because I know we certainly love to see the work that you're all doing there as inspiration for us.
Yeah, so we are members of Humanist International. And so we do coordinate with some international groups. I'm always happy to talk to folks overseas about how our groups are organizing and what's working and what's not working for them. I definitely have some insight into that, and it's people are people if they're in Australia or they're in the United States, right? So engaging folks in your cause is going to look the same no matter where you are. So yeah, definitely. Wonderful. We can't put you on the American Atheist map because that would be weird, but certainly we have lots of friends in Canada and other countries that we follow what they're doing and they follow what we're doing.
Fantastic.
So swag, protest signs, got some behind me, see?
Mm-hmm.
State director program. So Eric can talk about this, right? We just mentioned this. So state director program, these are volunteers on the ground in the states. The red states, we have state directors and they're volunteers. So this map shifts around as people come and go because that's the way volunteers work, right? Again, my goal is to have it be all red so that we have a state director in every state. State directors are basically our boots on the ground in a state. So we have state directors and assistant state directors. The state director oversees the whole state. Assistant state director might oversee like a county or a city or an area or a region. And they would be tied into what's going on locally there. The idea is that if like there's something going on in the press, they would be our person that we would reach out to talk to press locally. If there's something that we need to work with on coalition partners, they would be our person that we would ask to go do that. And it's fun. It's a good group of folks.
Now, this is kind of a shift from where the American Atheists somewhat started out as focusing on the federal, the capital of the United States, where everybody, all the laws are made. And from what I recall, during the administration of Donald Trump, it just seemed useless to go into the federal level. And so the shift was then focused to local, both state and even county and city levels. And that seems to be where this bore out, is if I recall right. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I mean, the state director program is precedes all of that. It's been around for decades where we've had state directors. But yes, I would say 100% the fact that we're focusing on state legislation and the fact that we try to coordinate groups into coalitions by state instead of nationally. You know, again, Secular Coalition for America does a lot of that federal work as well. And so we felt it was a better use of our resources to focus on state level work. And it's worked out pretty well, I think, in terms of folks feeling like they can get involved. Trying to do things federally if you're not near DC seems very intimidating, right? I mean, how am I going to get involved in that if I'm out in, you know, Nevada somewhere?
Right.
But you can certainly get involved in your state and in your town and in your city.
I'd love
to see all those red states. Listen, American Atheists, our colors are red and black. I know, I'm sorry. It just is what it is. Somebody's saying all those red states are hurting their eyes and
they're not
in blue. But that's not our colors. Our colors are red and black. Sorry. And yes, somebody pointed out that there's not very many state directors in New England. Again, it's one of those things where there's not a lot of religion in those New England states. So people don't feel like there's a need to be organized. And it's harder to find folks who want to focus on our issues, even though our issues umbrella over a lot of other issues, because they are working on other things, right? Medical aid and dying or reproductive rights or some other thing that they've gotten fired up about in the last 4 years in particular. So it is interesting to look at the map.
I really enjoyed this program and I felt lucky to be a part of this program. I got to go to Jefferson City and talk in front of the panel trying to, or a subcommittee trying to pass some shitty bathroom bill. And I also, in my local area, I was able to work with a city where they had a cross on public, in a public park, and we got that moved. So it was, and that project was actually working alongside of FFRF, Freedom from Religion Foundation too. It was both scary because way outside my comfort zone, but very fulfilling and thrilling too.
Well, and I mean, our hope is that we're a resource for folks, right? We don't want to just like be like, hey, Eric, you don't know what you're doing in Missouri. How about you go to Jeff City and testify, right? I tell people all the time, I volunteered for American Atheists before I was hired by American Atheists, and they would do all my homework for me. So I looked really smart. I'd go into Annapolis into the state house to testify on something, and Allison and the law clerks would have written all of the testimony. We would have all of the legal footnotes and everything. So I just looked really smart, and I'd show up and just read my 3 minutes worth of stuff. And it was great because I'm not as smart as them. And, but it was good.
Yeah, exactly. I felt super prepared going into these situations with the crack team that American Atheists had.
Yeah, yeah. And
or have.
Yeah, we still have them. And yeah, we've added Brett to that. So Brett is the one that will be writing most of those testimonies with the law clerks now and spearheading that part, the legislative advocacy part of it. So, and he's great. I really like him, so.
I can imagine too that there's a need for this continual momentum, that even if action is taken against what might be perceived to be just a small little bill or a small proposal, if we are not present, we as those in the atheist or non-religious community are not present, then it's very easy for them to just slip through all these sorts of legislations and things before we even realize that it's been put into law. So yeah, I imagine that you're looking for more people to be able to just keep the momentum up before the lawmakers.
Yeah, for sure. There's two things on that. There's the laws that we track that are bad. A lot of those are Project Blitz bills. There's a slide on it later, but Project Blitz is a project of the prayer caucuses. And so they started introducing state legislation. And like you said, they start off as innocuous, right? So it'll be put In God We Trust on the wall in the school, put a Bible class in the high school. It could be elective. It doesn't have to be, you know, it's just teaching religion. What's wrong with that? But then the next one is, you know, denial of folks who want to adopt babies based on my religious beliefs. That's the next level, right? Denials of care and healthcare facilities. So I don't want to treat that person because they're trans. And so it is a building thing. It's like a frog in water, right? You start with these little things, and then we keep building on them. And so that's the negative side of things. The positive side of things is that if I go in and testify in Annapolis, for instance, on the conversion therapy ban that passed a few years ago, I testified on that. And I could go in and say things that the other coalition partners wouldn't say because I was an atheist, right? I could say there should not be a religious exemption to this. Clergy shouldn't be able to try to do conversion therapy. There's an exemption because religious freedom. But I was the only one that testified that could say, without upsetting their followers and folks in their coalition, right? No, this should also not be a thing. There should be no religious exemption. And folks were thankful that I was there to voice that opinion that they had trouble voicing themselves, even though they agreed with it. So it is, it's fun work, I promise.
Fantastic.
Let's see. So ACEs, we touched on this a little bit. This is one of the things that we do for training for our state directors and for our affiliate group leaders. It's not, we didn't make it up. Some other people call it CASE. It's a well-known sort of community building sort of thing, and using the activism, education, service, and community pieces to have sort of your group firing on all cylinders. Like we were talking about, getting people to come to those community social events is pretty easy. We're gonna have beers and drinks, but then moving them into, usually the next thing you can move them into is doing some service events. So cleaning a road, collecting canned goods, doing that kind of thing. And then you can kind of move them into that activism piece. Okay, so you were upset about reproductive health, then we're gonna bring in speakers from Planned Parenthood And then we're going to go and we're going to do some lobbying on this issue. And then we're going to go volunteer with Planned Parenthood staff at the women's shelter, right? So you're kind of tying all of those things together. So that's a whole hour training I do in one slide. There you go.
That's so powerful, Sam. No, I'm glad you put that up there, because one of the hardest things is people feel like, what can I do? You know, I'm not qualified. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know how to do this. But yeah, this graph, the power of ACES, is so good that every one of us can do something in that section there, can contribute something, even if it might be deemed to be a small thing. It's not small, it's all part of that whole combined effort.
Yeah, and you'll find that there's different people who come to do different things, right? You'll have folks who always show up for service events and never show up for anything else. You'll have people who only show up for protests and they don't want to come and do the drinking events. You'll find that people will show up for the, you know, speakers and lectures and mm-hmm. webinar things and library meetings to talk to speakers and outside experts, but they won't come and do any of the rest of the things. And so that's fine, because you're still, as a group leader, appealing to different folks and growing your membership and getting more visible in your community for being out there doing things. So, yep.
Yeah, well, our local our local in Springfield, Missouri, the Springfield Skeptics, this is really kind of the model we stumbled upon before we even knew about it. And I got to tell you, the group felt alive. It felt like it was thriving. It felt felt like we were more than just a group of friends, that we were actually out there representing atheists and non-believers in a very positive light. It was really, really cool.
Well, I know that you've heard me say this before, so I'll go ahead and say it, but my longstanding unofficial official motto has been fuck the bullshit and do the things since when I was a volunteer
with
American Atheists. So don't worry about what the thing is, just figure out something to go do and overcome whatever objections your group has and go out and do it. And some things will stick and some things won't. And if it doesn't stick, then just, you know, try something else. And if it does stick, then build on it. But you do have to be, as a group leader, you have to be prepared that you might be the only person there. You, your spouse, and your kids might be cleaning the road all by your lonesome until you build up a group. And you just have to be okay with that. So pick things that you enjoy and that you're passionate about until you find other volunteers that are passionate about other issues, is my best advice I can give.
Excellent point. Excellent point.
So let's see, there we go. So one of the things we also do is we help groups coordinate across states. So in Kentucky, we have a really great team of state directors, and they had this In God We Trust law go up in the schools. And so at the beginning of the school year, we actually coordinated a media campaign. We got in a bunch of local media. They actually hit national, talking about why it was bad to have In God We Trust be required to be put up in the schools if you were a parent of non-religious kids, and making them feel marginalized and outside and otherized. So we helped with the media outreach, we helped coordinate folks, we helped, you know, amplify the messages, and then we can do media training. We have a great comms director, Tom, and he can talk to you about how to talk to press and how to do all of that. So that's one of the things we do.
Oh, that's perfect. That's really, really handy for sure. Because that's not something that naturally comes to folks. And I've been on a few news things, like as the secular, and they edited it horribly and made me look pretty bad. So I had to kind of learn.
You do have to be quick. Careful.
Yep.
They will try to twist your stuff for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I've mentioned, I don't know how many times now, about working in coalitions, but this is some of our folks that are off doing lobbying in a protest. So there's a picture of in Cincinnati, the top left picture, that was a reproductive health rally in Cincinnati. The next one over is Equality Florida, had a lobby day. And in the back row there is Devin Graham, our assistant state director down there in Florida, who does all of our legislative advocacy and won Atheist Activist of the Year in 2021. And then at the bottom is Larry and a state rep in Virginia, and they were lobbying on medical aid in dying and trying to get that introduced in the state of Virginia. So we work with lots of different coalition partners. If we don't have a state advocacy team in your state, as we spin them up, there's still things that you could do that we could plug you into if you're interested in doing that kind of work.
So what would be the difference between a secular group and a community group and a coalition? Like, what makes a coalition?
Good question. So in this one, you can see the top left corner is actually a bunch of different groups. You can see from their signs, right? You can see our "Keep Your Theocracy Off My Democracy" sign, but you can see that there's a bunch of other signs from the Ohio Reproductive Health Group, and you can see the bright pink of Planned Parenthood back there. So that's a coalition of groups who are all joining together about one subject, right?
Okay.
Not all of those groups are secular. In fact, most of them are not secular groups. They're not
organizations. I can see a sign in the lower right. It says pro-faith, pro-family, pro-choice. Mm-hmm. And then "Keep Your Theocracy Off My
Atheist songs. Yeah. And so, I mean, I think that people need to understand that, you know, we're not the only ones out there working on these issues. And you're going to be better off showing up and supporting other groups that are doing the work. And then in turn, they'll show up and support our work, right? So in Florida, for instance, Equality Florida, we've been working with them on lobbying. They've, you know, as you can imagine, it's Florida. There's a rash of really terrible laws this year. They had an anti-trans keeping kids out of sports law that passed and was signed on the first day of June, because it's such a wonderful state, definitely signed that into law on the first day of Pride. So we've been really working with Equality Florida on a bunch of these issues, and now they're part of our coalition working with our state advocacy team on a healthcare transparency act that we wrote and are introducing in the state of Florida. But because Devin's been working with all of these other groups on their issues, she was able to go to them and say, "Hey, we have this bill that we think you'll be interested in that we want to introduce," and was able to build a coalition around that. And we have a House sponsor, and it was introduced last week. And basically the gist of that law is that healthcare entities like hospitals, doctors practices will have to disclose which procedures they won't do. So you will be able to look at a hospital and know they don't treat trans people. They don't do abortions. They don't give you contraceptive, because Catholic hospitals are increasingly becoming a huge problem in this country. And so you have to know where you can go and get good care. And unfortunately, in a lot of places, the nearest hospital won't do the things you need. So.
So a coalition would be a group of organizations coming together for a single cause, and possibly temporarily or something like that.
Yep, it could be for one issue, and we can disagree on other issues, right? So like, interestingly, the Catholic Church is a really good partner on death penalty stuff, because they don't believe in the death penalty. But obviously, we're against them on many, many other issues. I just think, you know, it all depends on, you can partner with groups for one issue, if that's what you're trying to do, is get one law passed, or one thing done, or one community housed and fed, or whatever it is that you're working on, right? Sarah Ray's group in Florida, they started that Street Warriors program that they're doing down there through COVID. And that was actually a religious group that started it. And then they started their own chapter where they were too. And they also have a food pantry that they started up. And same thing, it was actually housed in a church down there. It was a UU, but it was housed in a church, and they had a bunch of religious partners. So, you know, work with the groups that are working on the same issues as you. And
that's a powerful point, that we don't have to be at loggerheads with these groups just because of our differences of view. If we can work together for a common cause, why not?
Yeah. And you know, there'll be definitely times that you disagree with the same view on a separate issue, but that's fine. Oops. That's what I want to do. So Secular Coalition for America is another coalition in the United States that lots of secular folks know about. They're the ones that do a lot of lobbying at that federal level. You can see Recovering from Religion is a member. And we are up to 20 member groups now for Secular Coalition for America. So they do lots of good work at the federal level. And it's really particularly valuable for some of the smaller organizations that don't have lawyers and lobbyists on their payroll to be able to have a voice in Washington and be able to be represented in that way. Blitzwatch, we talked about a little bit earlier, but that's the coalition. And you'll notice again, not all of those are secular groups, right? We've got the Interfaith Alliance in there. We have the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Health Choice in there. So there's religious groups that we are in coalition with on those Blitzwatch bills because they value separation of religion and government, even if they themselves are religious.
Can you explain what the Blitz is again, real quick?
Yeah, so Project Blitz, I have a different slide deck that has like 5 or 6 slides on it. So Project Blitz was started in, I forget what year, but it was the prayer caucuses. So prayer caucuses are organizations that start up in state houses, in the representative side of state houses, right? And so they'll be like, oh, we're going to have this caucus. It's a prayer caucus. We're going to meet on Sundays and we're going to pray together and rejoice in our faith. And so what they did is they wrote a bunch of legislation, model legislation, which is what often happens with groups when they're doing this type of work, is they'll write up model legislation and they'll float it to these different legislators who are in this prayer caucus. And then legislators will pick them up and introduce them pretty much like verbatim, right? They might change a little bit, but, and so we saw this trend of these different laws that were showing up in state after state after state, right? And so people started paying attention, like, where are these laws coming from? These In God We Trust laws, these Bible laws, these religious exemption laws, these adoption religious exemption laws. And it all came back to this Blitz, Project Blitz is the name of it. And so,
it was a horrible name.
Yeah, they've actually changed it. It's called something else now. It's slipping out of my mind. But when it first were introduced, it was Project Blitz. And there was a whole Project Blitz handbook. It was like 200 and something page PDF, right? About how we're going to start with these low ask laws, and then we're going to escalate to these other ones. And then basically we'll be able to introduce all this Christian nationalist stuff into state legislators. So this Blitzwatch coalition is a coalition of organizations who value the separation of religion and government and have been tracking these laws and trying to get the word out and do action alerts and things like that to counteract them because they're bad.
So what is it that the everyday person can do if they hear of some of these laws being proposed or momentum being gained by these ones with ulterior motives to, you know, perhaps Christian nationalist motives? What can we do? Can we contact these institutions, these organizations directly? Can we report it?
Dan dropped in the chat blitzwatch.org, and there's a website, and on there you can look specifically at this. We're tracking much more legislation than just the Blitzwatch ones, but you can look at what laws, which legislation is moving in what states, and then you can sign up for action alerts through Blitzwatch or AmericanAtheist.org. And send letters to your representatives opposing them, obviously. And then if you really, really, really want to get involved, you can organize a whole lobby day and go down to the Capitol and talk to your elected officials about these laws and why you oppose them. And we can help you figure out how to plan that even.
Excellent. And these, this was identified as there was something going on because the bills in each one of the states had such similar, if not exactly the same language from one another.
Like boilerplate down to everything was exactly the same. And I mean, that's not super uncommon to see. So for instance, you know, like I just talked about the Healthcare Transparency Act that we are introducing in Florida, working in coalition to get introduced. Different versions of that have been introduced in different states, and they all come from our language, right? Mm-hmm. But we're not like the sheer number of these Project Blitz bills was amazing. And I think I want to say 2017, but it's slipping out of my head that we really
it was pretty recent. It was pretty darn recent.
Yeah. So Yeah, so that's another coalition. We're also members of the Leadership Conference for Civil Rights, which with another 200 or so civil rights organizations. So that's another coalition that we're part of. It's a very broad coalition, though. They track all sorts of things, voter rights and racial justice and all sorts of things. So I don't have a slide with 200 logos on it, sorry. And American Atheist wants you, because it said the thing that I should say what your actions are at the end of this, right? Mm-hmm. So go to our website, sign up for our action alerts, sign up for our emails so that you know what's going on. If you're super, super, super enthusiastic.
Oh, no.
We lost Sam.
Oh, no. She had warned us about thunderstorms rolling through.
Like talking to people. So you are more than welcome to reach out to me, and my email.
Are you able just to repeat that last paragraph, Sam? We lost you for a little while. You were talking about what people can do to reach out to you or get involved. we've lost Sam, but that's okay. Up on the screen, Sam has put her contact details
there.
I think I'm back. You're back.
That was weird. Everything froze.
That's okay. We were covering the fact that you've got a contact there. So if people would like to get involved, your details are there on the screen now. Can you run through some of those for us? Or maybe if you're frozen, we can run through. So Sam's email is there, and we'll put that in the chat.
I'm going to stop sharing and see if that's what the problem is. We'll see.
Okay.
Maybe it's that storm. Remember, I told you at the beginning of this.
Yeah, you did.
A storm headed my way.
Maybe it's Project Blitz. It's out to get you and stifle your work.
Trying to silence me any way they can.
Yeah. That was a fantastic presentation, Sam. Thank you so much. How enlightening to see the work that is going on there behind the scenes, too. Thank you so much for that presentation.
You are very welcome, and if my internet holds out, I'm happy to hang around, see if there's any questions that people had. And
oh, perfect.
I mean, we chatted along the way, so
yeah,
it's fantastic. And Eric's put up in the chat the link to all of those the resources that you shared with us, and of course, those who are watching this afterwards, you'll be able to just follow along and grab those from the screen.
Yeah, so we have a few questions. And first, the one that shows up in the chat, what job positions does American Atheists have that do not require law degrees or other extensive scholarship?
I do not have a law degree.
Oh.
I actually have a counseling degree, but I tell people all the time I use it on the volunteers, so it's helpful. But I'm not directly using my counseling degree at this point. We have our vice president of programs, Debbie Goddard, who is with us, is not a lawyer. I am not a lawyer. So most of the programs folks, we have a legal sort of side and a program sort of side. Most of us are not people that have extensive degrees or are lawyers, but yeah, we do have a whole other side that is definitely lawyers.
Now, when it comes to secular community groups, what are the qualifications to become an American Atheist affiliate?
So to become an affiliate, you just have to be a group that meets either preferably in person, but in person's real weird right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that you have plans to meet in person at some point once you're allowed to be in person together regularly. And you just, there's a form to fill out on the American Atheist website under activism, local groups and affiliates, and then there's a form in there. And basically you just have to be a group that functions and is secular and believes in the separation of religion and government. We need a human being that can be our point of contact so that if we have updates and things like that, we can send them to you. You don't have to agree with or take part in all of our different programs, but I usually send out once a week or once every 2 weeks sort of what's going on in American Atheist world to our list of affiliate leaders. If we have a webinar, we'll ask you to push it out, right, and share it on your Facebook page. If we have a report coming out, we'll ask you to tweet about it. But you don't have to. There's not a requirement to. And then you get a spot on our map and a free copy of the magazine and the ability to ask for the support that I mentioned in terms of resources.
Wow. I think that ACES, the ACES program and materials, are those also available for the affiliates too? Is that something that they can access?
Yeah, so whenever we do those trainings, I send out emails to all the affiliate leaders. We also record them, so there you can go find the recordings of them as well. And then if you're an affiliate, you can come to our convention and take, you know, become part of, we do workshops in person too on the different trainings.
Fantastic. We had a few, sorry, Eric.
Yeah, just to follow up on that, and there is no requirement that you have to only be an affiliate of American Atheists and no other group. That's a myth.
Yes, no, 100%. You can, and I encourage community groups actually to affiliate with each and every single organization they can want or want to affiliate with, because we all do have slightly different specialties and things that we focus on. You know, American Humanist Association is a great organization, and they do a lot of things with social justice programming and climate programming and things that we don't really touch on at American Atheists, but that are also very important. And so I, as a community leader myself, plus I want all those stickers and I want all those posters and I want all those brochures. So when I'm tabling at Pride, I have all that free stuff to give away. And the only reason that I'll send it to you is if you're an affiliate. So that's the other real reason to affiliate with everybody, is all the free goodies.
Love it. Everyone loves a swag bag. That's great. Hey, Sam, we had a lot of other questions come through in the chat. And to those who have posed questions in the chat, I do apologize if we've missed some of them. It's not deliberate. We may have just missed them. So bear with us. But really good questions come through. Is the work that you do, or those your colleagues, do you ever feel that it's dangerous? Have you ever felt threatened by other entities or individuals because of the work that you're doing to separation of church and state?
Personally have not felt that way. I haven't had, you know, death threats or people stalk me or anything like that personally. I do know that other people have had issues with that working in the secular organizations, and some of our community local group leaders do. As a local group leader, I have gotten a lot of flack in the press locally where I live, not at a national level, for some of the things that I've done with my little group here. It can be off-putting. I'm the type of personality where it doesn't really bother me, but certainly there are people who have had much stronger reactions from folks and had to deal with that. And it's not good. It's certainly not good.
Well, thank you for what, you know, for the persistence that's involved. And it's good that you've got a whole good team of lawyers behind you all to be able to combat such stuff.
I have like 325 pounds of dog. Eric and I share a love of large beasts. And so I feel fairly well protected out here in the woods with my Great Dane Mastiff and my Great Dane St. Bernard. So
bring it on. That's it.
Another doggo.
A real quick question. With the secular survey that was done in 2019, I see that the data was sort of parsed out at a state level. Are you able to use that data to go any further finer detail, like to the county or parish level? Do you know?
I think, unfortunately, we didn't ask for that information. It would have been good if we like asked for zip codes or something, right? But I don't think that we did. I think we only went down to the state level. We did ask people where they lived, though. So we asked people, though we didn't track it by county or anything, we asked them, do you live in an urban area, a suburban area, a rural area? So we do have that data, but again, that's self-described, right? So I might say I live in a rural area, but you might think it's very suburban compared to where you live, right? so there is that piece of it, but not all the way down.
If you had if you had expected 1,500 respondents, that would definitely not have been suitable to go down to the county or parish level.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, if we do another one, we'll make zip code be a required answer.
Sasha, you got another question?
Yes, just bear with me. My screen froze up there. So, okay, here we are. Yeah, so we've got a fantastic question come through. Do you have any advice for someone who maybe has left religion but still has a spouse who's in? Should deconversion be attempted, or is it better to have respect and boundaries? And do those that you work with have any sort of thoughts or input on that?
Well, I feel like that's actually a question that should be directed at you all. Not so much me, but yeah, I mean, that's a super tough situation, isn't it? I'm sure it's one that you deal with in your support groups all of the time.
Yeah.
I am thankfully not in that situation and don't have to deal with that, but I know it's something that comes up a lot. And honestly, again, one of the things we like to do is tell folks, we're very upfront with, like, we don't need to be, nor are we the expert on everything at American Atheists. So if it's something having to do with mental health, then we'll often say, have you found Recovering from Religion? They're a great organization. If people want to focus on community service, we'll say, have you found Foundation Beyond Belief? They're a great organization. So I'm gonna pass on that one and see if anyone else wants to answer it. Daryl turned his camera on.
We actually did an RFRX on that with Rebecca Williams the middle of last year, and I've dropped that link to that video into the chat, but it was a fantastic conversation that we had right on that topic. And I think the final question we got is, I was a state director for Missouri, freaking loved it. It was great. What are some of the requirements, and how could someone become a state director or assistant director for American Atheists?
So you email me, that's the first requirement, and say, I'm super excited and I live in Montana where there's no state director. But even if we have state directors, we're always looking for assistant state directors. So basically the requirement is enthusiasm is a big piece of it. And, you know, wanting to be involved in sort of ramping up your activism. It's helpful if you are tied to the local groups in your area, but not necessarily a requirement. It's helpful if you kind of have an idea of what's going on in your state in terms of different issues, both in the secular space, but also in those partner organization spaces, right? So you volunteered a lot for Planned Parenthood, and now you want to volunteer for American Atheists, right? Then that sort of is a really great skill set because you already have that organizing sort of skill set in your hat. But there's not like a hard requirement. Like you must have 500 followers on Twitter. Like that's not where we're at, because we're here to train people and invite them into our community of state directors and be supportive to each other. So we have a Facebook group, and we do every other month calls, and we have these trainings, and so you're really hooking into a team. So looking for folks to fit into that team.
Yeah, you really it really is very clear, Sam, that the work that you all do is really positive. It's positive activism. It's positive support. It's not bitter, and perhaps, you know, as some on the other side might try and make out, that we're all angry atheists with this work. No, this is positive activism, and it's all just to help the community and help us thrive as people living together. So I really love that. I love the fact that with this training and with the community work, you have such a positive outlook on things.
Yeah, no, it's, as I mentioned before, I volunteered for American Atheists before I started working for American Atheists, and there's a reason I chose to volunteer for them before I even chose to work for them, because I just really, as a community organizer, I found that the resources that they were giving me were very valuable, and the training that I was getting from them was very valuable, and being part of that team of state directors and assistant state directors, and being able to bounce ideas off folks and say, you know, hey, we're thinking about doing a scholarship program for high school students. Has anyone done that? and have people be able to say yes, no, this is what worked, this is what didn't work.
Oh, neat.
It's really
neat.
Fun. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, and I can attest to that as well. The resources that you guys have put together is freaking fantastic. I was wrong. We have one final question. And you may need to defer this over to the legal department, but is American Atheist able to hold any of these judges who are religious activists instead of judges? Are they able to hold them accountable in some way, call them out on their poor or religious-based decisions, decisions based in religion?
I mean, we criticize all of the judges all of the time. There's not much we can do about it besides put better judges in place, right? So we can all advocate for judges who have civil rights backgrounds, for instance, to be appointed. And Biden's administration is doing a really great job of that, of trying to get some diversity on the bench. But it's, you know, it's a slow process. It really is. And so, unfortunately, so yes, we can criticize. Yes, we can make noise about it. We can tweet articles and do Facebook posts and do that sort of thing, do press releases and send things to the administration, encouraging them to appoint better judges. But, you know, I'm sure, again, I have a whole panel of people that you can invite on to talk about all the legal stuff.
It's a start.
Many of
these. It'll be very depressing. You won't feel so positive after the talk, I'm saying. Wow. That's why Eric invited me on. He's like, let's talk about all the good things we can do.
Because many of these judges in the U.S. and in the upper federal level are nominated and appointed, but then in some of the lower levels, but like the district, the lower district, those are elected. Like they actually have to campaign, and so we can kick out the local and levels just by reelecting folks. But who's gonna really look into a judge?
Yeah. Well, we need to keep campaigning to expand the court too, don't we?
Yeah.
Glenda's snapping.
Well, Sam, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about American Atheist. Before we kind of wrap this up and conclude, do you have any final thoughts or things that you wanted to talk about that we didn't?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. You know, if you're looking for a group, you know, go to our website and try to find one. If there's not one, I'll help you start one. That's the other thing I didn't mention. If you live in a spot where there's not a group, I'm happy to help folks and give them pointers. I started my little tiny group here from scratch. And so we have a bunch of folks who've started groups who can give you some advice there.
Fantastic. And we appreciate, on behalf of Recovering from Religion, we appreciate the way in which we're able to align ourselves with many of the work and the goals and the efforts that you guys put in. And we appreciate the support that you give to us at Recovering from Religion as well. It's nice to have those common goals.
Absolutely.
Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, healing, and support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.